Good morning. This is the November issue of Health Futures Digest, and our topic today is genomics. This is going to be the first part of a two-part series on this subject. This month we will talk about the advances in the technologies of sequencing of DNA that make up our genome, and touch upon some of the tests that the now being able to be performed upon the genome, and we'll touch a little bit about epigenetics too. So, first of all, sequencing. The target of $1,000 for a complete individual DNA sequence, that is to say, $1,000 to sequence an individual's entire genome, has long been touted as a sort of holy grail, an amount assumed to be affordable to individuals, at least in the rich countries. Whether that's true or not, absent market manipulation, there's no reason for sequencing costs to stabilize at $1,000. Indeed, quite the opposite is likely, to the point where every individual on the planet could be sequenced inexpensively. The reason is that the sequencing technology grows exponentially more powerful. In August, a Stanford University professor claimed to have sequenced his entire genome for less than $50,000 with a team of just two other people in a single lab with just one sequencing machine. And that's a terrific effort, but the professor was somewhat behind the exponential curve because 2 months earlier, in June, a genomics technology company, Illumina, launched a $48,000 genome sequencing service. And 2 months later, in other words, just last month, October, Illumina was overtaken by Complete Genomics, which offers now a full sequence for $20,000. Currently, that's the cheapest you can find anywhere. Now, Complete Genomics also said it would have the price down to $5,000 in next year or in 2011, and that's a degree of confidence seemingly justified by more than just the exponent. The company recently said it has sequenced three human genomes at an average fixed cost in chemicals of $4,400. The last of the three cost only $1,726. But of course, you have to add to this chemical cost the cost of the sequencing machines, the computers, the human labor, and of course a profit margin, and all of that is what's brought the price up to the current $20,000 tag. But of course, the variable costs would be much lower given volume, given very high volume, which is quite possible, given a low enough cost. So you're chicken and the egg. But in the print version of the digest, or the online version, I should say, I've drawn up a little table showing how the exponent looks today. And just very briefly, it points out that in 2003, the first human genome was sequenced. That was a representative human genome because the DNA was contributed by multiple donors to the Human Genome Project. That cost $2.7 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. 4 years later, James Watson, the co-discoverer with Francis Crick of the DNA double helix, had his entire genome sequenced at a cost of $2 million. That's quite a drop from $2.7 billion. But a year later, customers of Canome, one of the sequencing companies like Illumina, were getting their genomes sequenced for $350,000. A year later, the company, Canome, had dropped its price to $99,000. Later that year, Illumina came back with that $48,000 genome, and later yet, as we've just heard, they're now at $20,000 for the complete genome, and are saying that next year they will be at $5,000. And here's an example of why we're confident that $5,000 or even $1,000 is by no means the end of the exponential line. IBM is among several groups developing a nanopore chip expected to eliminate the time-consuming and money-consuming need for chopping, amplifying, labeling, and reassembling short stretches of DNA, which is how sequencing is done currently. The intermediate result of the current method is a digital jigsaw puzzle, an enormous jigsaw puzzle of 3 gigabits of chopped up data needing careful reassembly before it can even be analyzed. In contrast, nanopore chips can handle much, much longer stretches of DNA, so the jigsaw puzzle is much easier to put together. IBM is using one of its BlueGene supercomputers to simulate nanopore chips. In other words, it hasn't built them yet. It's built them in silico, so to speak, and it runs. It's been running virtual experiments with these virtual versions of the chip. And currently, the BlueGene computer can currently calculate the physics of tens of thousands of atoms per picosecond. That's a picosecond is a trillionth of a second. So this computer can calculate the physics of tens of thousands of atoms, each trillionth of a second, in the DNA molecule. And by the time IBM is finished, they expect to be modeling 200,000 atoms per picosecond. Now, when you translate from the virtual to the real world and fabricate the chips with very large arrays on them, the chips will have the ability to very quickly and very cheaply sequence the genomes of individuals. And that, of course, is going to greatly accelerate the trend towards personalized medicine, which is to say, medicine tailored to the patient's individual genome. Oxford Nanopore is another company tackling the same problem of reading long sequences, having already demonstrated that its technology can identify DNA base pairs with near total accuracy, reading the DNA directly without, again, the use of costly chemicals and imaging. The system can also detect, much more easily than current sequencing methods, epigenetic, or that is to say, environmentally caused changes in DNA, which can result in disease, including cancer. IBM's large arrays could make Oxford's technology scalable and commercially viable, but Oxford has already licensed technology from other companies for several nanopore sequencing methods in hopes of becoming the first to meet or beat the US National Human Genome Research Institute's target year of 2014 for successful nanopore sequencing. Now, on to the topic of genetic tests. We should note that Illumina, we mentioned a few minutes ago, only sequences the DNA. It leaves the much more difficult and problematical clinical interpretation of those sequences to companies such as Canome, 23andMe, Navigenics, and Decode. Decode is based in Ireland. Iceland. Those companies already use gene chips, microarrays that is, to analyze specific genetic variations for disease predisposition. Whole genome sequencing captures a much higher volume of genetic information, as well as additional types of genetic variations, such as deletions and duplications of segments of the genome. But Illumina apparently does intend to compete indirectly with these companies by developing, of all things, an iPhone app enabling consumers to analyze their own genetic information and receive guidance on, for example, the correct medications for a condition and the correct doses of a medication to take and so on. And I would note that the cell phone, as I've talked about before, is becoming the medical diagnostic device equivalent of the Swiss Army knife. Well, so we have these wonderful gene tests proliferating right now. Just how good are they? How valid and reliable are the testing services that companies like Canome and so on offer? Well, in the cases of 23andMe and Navigenics, the superstar geneticist Craig Venter and his colleagues set out to find out. Each company, 23andMe and Navigenics, based their interpretation of the raw sequencing data on published studies about genetic markers for disease. Now, Venter and his colleagues found that for the 5 patients and 7 diseases tested in their comparison, the raw data supplied by each company for each of those patients was almost 100% consistent, so no problem there. However, their interpretation of the data was not so consistent. For example, for lupus and type 2 diabetes, 3 of the 5 patients received conflicting results from the 2 companies. For psoriasis, 23andMe reported a risk factor of four times greater for one individual than Navigenics had reported, while Navigenics reported only a 25% greater risk factor for the patient. That's a threefold difference between the two companies for that particular risk factor. Technology Review contributor David Ewing Duncan compared the results from 23andMe and Navigenics together with another company's results, Decode's spin-off company called DecodeMe. And he found that for overall risk of heart attack, Navigenics reported high, 23andMe reported medium risk, and DecodeMe reported low risk for a patient. He also found several less striking contradictions for diabetes, macular degeneration, and some other diseases. So there are some problems, and 23andMe and Navigenics have agreed with the Venter report's recommendations on ways to reduce their inconsistencies. And while they'd like to co-develop standards for the field, they seem to recognize the need for a neutral party such as the CDC or the FDA or even the National Institute of Standards and Technology to set the standards. Venter does acknowledge that advances in sequencing technology is rapidly producing a more accurate and thorough alternative to those currently used by these companies. So things could get better even if the standards are not set, because the technology will become produce better, more valid, more reliable results. So if nanopore sequencing makes current methods of detecting genetic abnormalities, even though those current methods themselves are fast and still accelerating, but nanopore sequencing makes them begin to seem old and clunky, but it makes the current method of screening unborn children for genetic abnormalities, such as Down syndrome, it makes those current methods of screening seem positively Stone Age. The current method of screening unborn children, that is, for genetic abnormalities is called karyotyping. And karyotyping tries to identify problems by examining the size and shape of chromosomes, tiny as they are, invisible of course to the eye, that is nevertheless a gross test, and it misses many serious conditions which if they're missed, they thus go undetected until birth, when they become obviously a problem for the child. Baylor College of Medicine researchers have found that a type of DNA chip used in pediatric medicine called array comparative genomic hybridization, I know it's a mouthful, let's shorten it to ACGH chips. So there's a type of DNA chip called an ACGH chip used in pediatric medicine. That chip can identify more than 270 genetic syndromes, and it can provide a more detailed and accurate genetic profile, and can more reliably detect far smaller chromosomal abnormalities of fetus than karyotyping can. So, and out of 300 cases examined in the Baylor study, ACGH testing provided new information about the risk of disease for 7 of the cases, including 2 cases that would otherwise have been missed. However, ACGH testing is more expensive than karyotyping, and in any case, both do require invasive procedures to extract amniotic fluid or placental tissue for testing, and that can result in miscarriage. Several research teams are currently working on ways to obtain stray fetal cells from the mother's blood instead. DecodeMe, we just mentioned, launched two new tests in January of this year, 2009. One detects 8 genetic variations associated with the risk of heart attack, intracranial and abdominal aortic aneurysms, stroke and atrial fibrillation, peripheral arterial disease, and venous thromboembolism. The other test, called DecodeMe Cancer, measures 29 variations associated with the risk of prostate, lung, bladder, colorectal, and breast cancers, as well as basal cell carcinoma. They cost $195 and $225 respectively. They're much cheaper than Decode's $985 genome-wide screen. It's not a full sequence, but it's a screen of the whole genome that assesses genetic risk for 34 diseases and traits ranging from diabetes to male pattern baldness. The variations detected by the DECODE test have been shown in the research literature to increase only modestly an individual's risk of the diseases with which the variations are associated, so they're not all that helpful in determining preventive or therapeutic interventions. But it's important for a physician, indeed for a patient, to know if a patient goes from no risk or no known risk of a disease to a moderate risk of that disease. And these tests may at least reveal that much. As understanding of the combinatorial effects of multiple genetic variations grows, the predictive power of the tests will increase, and at the very least, the data gathered through such testing is useful in research into the diseases themselves. I'm not going to read through the several examples of tests that have become available, but there's one for colon cancer, there's a detector for multiple biomarkers, and there is research towards a handheld DNA diagnostic device for doctors' offices. Ultimately, of course, as we've noted, it's probably all going to end up on your cell phone. Not everything will end up on your cell phone, certainly not the data that is being produced. Brigham and Women's Hospital plans to collect blood samples from all consenting patients so that patients' genomes can be analyzed together with clinical and demographic data contained in the hospital's EMR. This will result in a massive database of EMR data plus genomic data, and that combination will allow physicians and scientists to research genetic risk factors and predict how well a therapy will work for the individual patient. It'll lead to personalized medicine. Brigham and Women's is not the only one doing this. Kaiser Permanente is into it. A similar project in the UK called the UK Biobank is in the process of collecting samples from 500,000 people. So we can expect a great deal more work in that area, and of course a veritable tsunami of data to be stored and analyzed, so hospital CIOs should be starting to think about that right now. Because there's something else on the horizon, that in fact that mixing of the genome data plus the clinical demographic, family history, etc. data that's stored in the electronic medical record and the personal health record, the things that have been touted by Google Health and Microsoft's Health Vault and so on and so forth. All of that data will be of tremendous help to researchers in another emerging and increasingly vital area of genetics called epigenetics. That's basically the Lamarckian idea that we're capable of inheriting characteristics that may be acquired by our forebears. This was kind of forgotten because Darwin's theory of natural selection kind of swept everything else off the rug when it came out. But Lamarckism has received some partial corroboration from several studies. In fact, one shows that the offspring of mice that were genetically engineered to have memory problems but then were raised in an enriched environment. In other words, they were given toys to play with and exercise and other mice to interact with and so on for 2 weeks during adolescence. The offspring of those mice, remember they were genetically engineered to have memory problems, the parents were, but the offspring of those mice nevertheless had better memory despite having the same genetic defect as their parents and despite being given no exposure to that enriched environment that their parents had had. And there are some other tests that we write about in the online edition of the journal. And finally, I would mention that there is an epigenetic treatment for acute lymphoblastic leukemia that at least has worked, of course, as usual, in mice, and there's going to be a long way to go before that reaches patient bedside. Now, in the next issue of the Digest in December, we're going to report on quite a number actually of other gene therapies that are either already at the bedside, at least in terms of human clinical trials, or are still in the animal lab, or in some cases still in the petri dish. Nevertheless, the point we want to make is that I could not have written an issue of the Digest like this 1 year ago. We were nowhere near this far advanced in our progression of being able to sequence the genome so quickly in order to understand enough of what's happening within that genome to be able to test for various an increasing number of conditions, and finally to be able to actually start using that data to treat the genome itself to cure conditions. So more on this next month. Meantime, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.